I leave Sisyphus at the foot of the mountain. One always finds one's burden again. But Sisyphus teaches the higher fidelity that negates the gods and raises rocks. He too concludes all is well. This universe henceforth, without a master, seems to him neither sterile nor futile. Each atom of that stone, each mineral flake of that night-filled mountain, in itself forms a world. The struggle itself toward the heights is enough to fill a man's heart. One must imagine Sisyphus happy. Welcome back, everyone, to the Chaos Ball Podcast. It's been a couple weeks, and boy, has it been a really terrible time for Mariners baseball. I read you maybe the most famous excerpt from the myth of Sisyphus, because as this season has progressed, I often feel that Mariners fans are Sisyphus, and Mariners fandom is kind of represented in that story. And supporting the Mariners is the rock. It'd be easy to give up. It'd be quite easy to give up being a Mariners fan, I think. You might think so too, but no, it's not. We know it's not. The boulder falls down the mountain. What does Sisyphus do? What do? We continue supporting the team. And this season, boy, has it been quite Sisyphean, dare I say it. I missed not the most eventful 2 weeks in Mariners baseball, but my little vacation hiatus here came at a time as Mariners baseball in 2024 has come crashing down into the earth's crust. They were on high for quite a while, and I come back and things are not going great. Absolute shambles is where this franchise is currently, and I'm going to go over some big news that happened today. Listen, it happened before I recorded for once, which is really refreshing. After the road trip, I figured something was going to happen. I didn't necessarily think it was going to be Thursday, but thankfully it was Thursday before I recorded this podcast for once, instead of directly after I recorded it. And that big news I'll get into later in this podcast, but really I'm back. It's been a few weeks. As I said, I was gone. I was without cell service for the entire weekend of the Mets series. And then I couldn't really watch any ball for the Tigers series that opened the road trip from hell. And I come back and I see that they sweep the Mets, and I kind of left on a high note. They were playing pretty well post-deadline. I come back to reality, internet reality, and I see they sweep the Mets, and I'm quite jubilant they swept the Mets. I was like, oh, great. That's awesome. But then I see the Astros are on like an 8-game win streak. And then the next week and a half happens. They go 1-8. On a road trip against the Tigers, the Pirates, and the Dodgers, the one win coming against the Pirates. They have been one of the worst teams in baseball since the trade deadline, and it's officially rock bottom. It feels like the past few weeks it's looked like, to me, gauging the fans and the pulse of the fan base, it seems like rock bottom has been hit multiple times the past couple weeks. I think officially when the 10-game lead collapsed, that felt like it could have been a low point. And then the deadline happened. And the deadline felt, I was critical of it, but I still enjoyed the moves, and I was like, that's helpful. Okay. The spirits were back up, and the offense came alive a little bit after the deadline. And that did not signal what was going to happen in the weeks to come, the weeks to follow the deadline. And now they're at 500. Their big acquisitions, I should say, at the deadline, what have they been up to? Justin Turner has a 69 OPS plus and 64 plate appearances. Randy Rosarena has a 114 OPS plus and 96 plate appearances. That's solid. That'd be first on the Mariners all season long if that was all season. 114 OPS plus. Jimmy Garcia has pitched 9 innings with a 6 ERA and a 7.27 FIP. real tough. Real tough. Justin Turner has looked, I want to say, not as advertised, but I wasn't super excited about that anyway. Randy has been fine. And yeah, Jimmy has just been bad, just plain bad. It's, I talk about relievers existing on a knife's edge quite often, and it's even more, their production is even more under a microscope when they're A, having a good season already, and then they get traded at the deadline, and then B, when they get on a new team to begin with, the sample is 2 months post-trade deadline. Some relievers can have absolutely terrible months of 6 ERA. Jimmy Garcia could go out in September and have a 0 ERA and 9 innings pitched. That's just the nature of relief pitching. But when some of your worst pitching of the season comes immediately after getting acquired at the deadline by a, I'll put it in quotes, contending baseball team, it looks so bad. It looks awful. It's so much worse than if you just had a quite pedestrian or bad month of June. You know, you can kind of blow it under the rug. When you are one of the new acquisitions on a baseball team to bolster a bullpen that is trying to win a division and make the playoffs, the fact that he has not had a good 9 innings so far for the Mariners is so unfortunate for everyone involved. It's just real tough. On June 18th, the Mariners were 10 games ahead of the Astros and the Rangers, for that matter, in the American League West division. And on August 22nd, the Seattle Mariners are 5 games back of the Astros in the AL West and 7.5 back of a wild card spot. It might truly be over for the 2024 Mariners. Some significant staff departures today, yesterday, if you're listening on Friday, might signal how dipover, how jover it all is. A 15-game swing in the standings in 2 months is insane. 44-31 to 64-64 was the Mariners' record. Anyone slightly knowledgeable of the game of baseball knew that they weren't that good of a team. I don't think they weren't going to continue at a 44-31 pace. I don't think they were going to continue that 10-game lead. That was certainly a little fluky at the time. I think most people who were not just blinded by optimism, I guess, could see that. At the time, I said there's probably no way that 10-game lead lasts. But I didn't see it coming crashing down this hard in such a short amount of time. I did implore them to step on the gas with the 10-game lead because I knew the Astros weren't that bad. And I thought the Mariners were a little bit better than this. This road trip, I think it legit ended their season. Like, I don't know. Part of the collapse was the Mariners playing more like their true talent. And true talent team was probably a 90-win team max for this baseball team coming into the year. They've obviously played worse than that since the 10-game division lead. But it's been partially the Mariners kind of coming back down to earth a little bit in terms of the outcomes of their games. But it's also just been the Astros being an absolutely ungodly level of fuego. They have been insanely hot, especially of late. It coincided poetically with the Mariners' terrible road trip. The Astros have just been on an absolute heater there. A lot of people got healthy. Their pitching has improved greatly. They got Verlander back, Hunter Brown's cooking, and they kind of got a lot of the offense healthy. And they are now comfortably in first place again. They are inevitable. The Astros continue to be inevitable. They're going to be going for their, seventh straight ALCS appearance, something like that. It's been quite a run for them. And the Mariners are hitting rock bottom. It's real tough. This division was winnable. This division was quite winnable this year, and it looks out of reach at the moment. 5 games back, on August 22nd with, I mean, that's what, 5 weeks to play, maybe a little bit extra. That's not out of the realm of possibility that they overcome five games, but five games in that amount of time is a decent amount, which really should signal how insane 15 game swing is in 2 months on the calendar. Like, that is absurd, man. It's in like 1995, it took, and I wasn't alive, but I'm aware of this. It took a collapse of the California Angels for the Mariners to come back late in the year in that division. And it's going to take an epic collapse of the Astros at this point and an absolute turnaround from the Mariners offense if they actually want to win this division, because I think they're just going to have to. They're 5 games back in the division, 7.5 on the wild card. Like, I think we've known for a few weeks now, months even, that wild card might be off the table for this team. It was kind of division or bust. I think there's just too many good teams in the American League. Like, they're not better than the Yankees or the Orioles. I don't think they're better than the Red Sox. The Rays even have, theoretically, a better win record than them right now. I don't think they're better than the Twins. I don't think they're better than the Guardians or the Royals. They're not going to make a wild card. It was division or nothing. And it's brutal looking at the standings because the Rangers are cooked. They've been out for weeks now, too, since the deadline. It's been over for them. They're 10 games back. They're 59-69. It's less competition than there was last year. And the Mariners barely missed the playoffs last year. And now the Rangers are completely out. All they had to contend with was the Astros, who started off historically bad. And if they end up winning 90 games this year, it's going to be, I don't want to call it an unprecedented turnaround, but I think I talked about it when they were in the mud earlier in the season, when they were like 9 games below 500. I think to come back and finish the season with a winning record is pretty astounding from that spot. That is just how difficult that is. And they're doing it. They're 10 games up now, 10 games and above 500, 68 and 58. It's crazy and demoralizing, and it feels terrible. I'm going to continue watching Mariners games because I, too, am like Sisyphus. And the one big difference between me and Sisyphus, I don't feel joy right now. But one has to imagine Sisyphus felt joy, apparently, when he started to push the rock up. Because just starting to push the rock up again means you're the hero of the story. Just starting to watch the Mariners again after what has transpired today means you're a hero out there listening to this as a fan. Man, it's just brutal. I can't delay any longer. The big news today, Scott Servais, he's out of here. He's gone. Absolute calamity in the Mariners front office and ownership group today. Scott has been fired. Ken Rosenthal broke this news earlier today. Yesterday, he broke this news Thursday afternoon. Scott has been fired, and Dan Wilson has been promoted to interim manager, and I'll get into that in a second. And everyone's like, okay, that's really odd. Not that Scott got fired, but that Dan Wilson was promoted to manager immediately. And I was like, okay, wow, they had an interim lined up right away. When Scott was fired, he was the first one to go. So they let go of Jared DeHart as well, the hitting, I think, main hitting coach and like hitting strategy guy, apparently. They got rid of him, which makes sense. I think once Scott was fired, it was probably like abundantly clear they were going to get rid of the hitting coach. This offense is historically bad, and that was obviously the next domino to fall in the coaching staff, and rightfully so, probably. I don't think you deserve to keep your job after what the offense has done this season. And we kind of had to just sit with the Scott being fired for a while, though. That broke, and then more stuff trickled in a little bit later, but it took a minute. It took a minute for details to be ironed out. Like, Ken broke this as we learned later, prematurely. So the timeline went, Scott Service announced he was fired. He didn't announce it. Ken Rosenthal broke. They were firing him. That wasn't too surprising. I think a lot of people at this point expected it. I definitely expected that to happen after the 1-8 road trip and just where they're at right now. I think it's one of those things that is one of the more formalities of the sport that doesn't feel like it would do a whole lot. I've always been vocal about the fact that I don't think baseball managers are like super integral to winning. I think they definitely can help. I think a great manager is a market inefficiency and is super valuable. But I think most managers are fine and decent. I think Scott Service overall was a pretty good manager. I don't think he was great, but I also don't think he was bad. I think a bad manager can really bring you down. I think a great manager can really get you some extra wins. And then I think most managers fall kind of in the middle. But so this wasn't super surprising. And then it was announced shortly after that Dan Wilson was taken over. And it was like, okay. That was my first surprise of the day, because normally it's like a base coach or a bench coach taking over in an interim spot when a guy gets fired in the middle of the season like this. It's like, okay, the bench coach steps up, or one of the base coaches, like Christopher Negron, when Scott Service was suspended a couple years ago, managed a game or two, I believe, for this team. He's undefeated as a manager in Major League Baseball. I think he's 2-0. So I was surprised that it came not from the coaching staff, but Dan Wilson, who I know had like briefly managed the Tacoma Rainiers recently, but more importantly had been doing stuff for Root Sports. Like, he'd been in the booth a decent amount this year and last year, a lot more this year. So that was just surprising. I was like, okay, I get, but it also kind of tracks for me. I was like, they're just putting in kind of a good vibes guy in an interim role. But I knew that clearly didn't bode well for the rest of the coaching staff if none of them were given the interim title. So and it still could come out that more staff are getting let go. All we know right now is Scott Service and Jared DeHart. But I was very confusing when that happened. And then stuff trickled in from beat writers that DePoto was going to have a press conference, obviously, to make this announcement official that they were letting Scott go and that Dan Wilson was being elevated from his role in the booth to interim manager, presumably, that we all thought. And then DePoto came out in his announcement and said that Dan Wilson is the 21st manager in club history, 18th full-time. And every report has basically confirmed this. It seems like Dan Wilson is the permanent manager. Permanent manager. And these words are quite key, so I'll read you a full quote from DePoto. He said, quote, "We believe that we need a new voice in the clubhouse. Dan knows our team and has been a key member of our organization, working with players at every level over the past 11 years. He is well respected within and outside of our clubhouse, and we are confident that he will do a great job in leading our group over the final 6 weeks of the season and moving forward," end quote. Everyone kind of panicked at that. Everyone was like, what is going on? Is it a typo? Did they make a mistake? It doesn't say interim. Jerry said moving forward, not just the final 6 weeks of the season. And it seems like it's true. He's just the manager now. And then shortly after this, it was Edgar Martinez was announced to be brought in as a coach. And everyone's making jokes. They're just bringing back the 95 Mariners. They're playing the hits, doing some fan service. This was shocking. Dan Wilson is now the manager of the Seattle Mariners, it seems like, on a permanent basis, which is opened a whole can of worms of options of what is going on in the front office, what happened the last few weeks with the front office, with the coaching staff, with the ownership, what's happening today and in the future with the front office and the rest of the coaching staff. It seems pretty reckless to do this. To just promote Dan Wilson outright as manager, like not even going through a traditional interview process, with a guy like, I don't know, like Skip Schumacher is going to be available this offseason. He's not returning to the Marlins. That was known at the start of the season. Probably the hot guy right now to get if you need a manager. I know the White Sox are going to be looking at him. It just seems weird to announce a permanent replacement quite literally an hour less than even, like an hour after you fired your manager of 9 years. One with very little to no management experience. It's kind of bizarre to do that and not a good PR move. This team has continued to absolutely bungle PR recently, years ago, but more recently they have been awful at PR. It's impressive, and I think it goes back. I think it's a front office thing, but I do really think it's an ownership group thing. I think it starts with the ownership group in terms of the PR messes that they create, and they're not good at handling this stuff. And this just looks so bad. And then shortly after this was all happening, the real kicker came in on the timeline per Adam Jude. Quote, Scott Servais learned of his firing this morning from a breaking news alert on social media a couple hours before he was scheduled to meet with Jerry Dipoto, end quote. And that meeting was presumably, obviously, to let him know he was being relieved of his duties. He found out his firing via social media. The manager that has been with your team for 9 seasons with this front office for that same amount of time. He came in at the exact same time at this front office. He finds out via social media hours before he was having a meeting with Dipoto, seemingly his buddy. What the hell happened? That is unprofessional. That is unserious. A absolute PR nightmare and an embarrassment. Like, that is embarrassing for the franchise because someone leaked it to him in the organization, whether it was a front office, whether it was a minority owner, which I doubt they would do, but who knows? It calls into question who actually made this move. It's so hard to parse through what is gone on because it's hard to tell what decisions the front office is making versus what decisions the owners are making. I don't know. A couple takes that I've had before I just talk about Scott Servais for a little bit. It's super intriguing about, maybe we'll learn more from reporters. Maybe we won't learn it at all. But because like Edgar Martinez and Dan Wilson were being installed right now and permanently, seemingly on a permanent basis, that immediately made me think that the front office wasn't really getting a makeover this offseason. Like, when Scott was fired, everything was running through my head like, oh, okay, this might be a whole ladder of events, a chain of events starting with Scott, and it's going to go all the way up to Jerry Dipoto and Justin Hollander, and they're just going to clean house in the front office. That's what I thought was going to happen. But then given this news that Servais found out via social media, seemingly before Dipoto had set up a meeting with him already to go over this, right? Maybe this was an ownership call entirely, and they were the ones that immediately installed Dan Wilson and wanted to. And that would mean the opposite, obviously, than what I said about them being safe because of this. That could mean their days are numbered for Dipoto and his regime. I don't know what this is. It's very hard to parse through who is actually doing what, because this is embarrassing for the whole organization. It doesn't matter who actually leaked it, what happened. Clearly, this decision to install Dan Wilson as permanent manager has been thought about by someone in some capacity for a decent amount of time. Now, you don't just make that decision willy-nilly. You don't just, like yesterday after they capped off the 1-8 road trip, John Stanton's not like, okay, cool, all right, well, I'm going to call Jerry, he's going to fire Scott, and then Dan Wilson, manager, book it. Clearly, this was thought about by someone, whether that be the ownership group and the board and such, or Jerry Dipoto, or both. Obviously, they were probably mulling the firing of Scott Servais at some point. But again, the immediate installation of Dan Wilson as manager and then the fact that Scott found out like that is brutal, and if that was Jerry DeFoto's fault. I mean, obviously, before Ken Rosenthal had the scoop, they had made this decision, whether that was yesterday or early yesterday morning before Ken made the announcement. They had obviously made that decision, and then Jerry set up a meeting with Scott later in the day to go over this decision. What happened in between? How long were they sitting on this? When did they make the decision to fire him, and who leaked it? Right now, it does not matter for their PR. It looks terrible either way, like I said. It's just that is embarrassing, and I don't know. Maybe we'll find out more in the next couple of days. I'm just super intrigued to know where this came from the organization. Because if ownership indeed is the one that was like, we're making Dan Wilson permanent manager, we're bringing Edgar back, we're going to bring in Jamie Moyer as a pitching coach, Randy Johnson's coming back, Joey Corr is coming back, we're bringing back all of the gang, and DePoto is just knows he's going to get fired maybe that in the offseason, maybe that's that. But it's just weird to say Dan Wilson is now the permanent manager and then go and fire the front office after this. That would just feel like a crazy, bizarre move to do. So, I don't know. I'm leaning that the front office is going to stay. I'm leaning that they made Dan Wilson the permanent manager, and the front office is going to get another season to try and win with this team. That makes the most sense in my mind, but then again, this organization does not make sense. They're not normal. They clearly handle hiring and firing in a really terrible way, both on a human level, a business level, and a PR standpoint. They handle it terribly on every rung of the ladder in hiring and firing. They clearly do not handle this stuff well. And I think that reflects on the ownership. I don't think that's necessarily a front office problem. I think it can be, but I think it is ultimately a reflection of the ownership group, which we know sucks. We all hate them. There's nothing new. Just, it's been a day. It's been an absolute day. The craziest part, too, it's an off day. It's like everyone's taking a break. Like, the fans included, everyone's, like, taking a break after a really tough road trip. And Scott's fired. DeHart's fired. Dan Wilson is the interim manager. Edgar Martinez is a coach on the team now. Dan Wilson, actually the permanent manager, not an interim. And then Scott found out he was fired via Twitter. Like, what? God, just regardless of what happened, whose fault it was, to find out you're being fired from a job you were at 9 years, to seemingly a buddy who was the president of baseball operations, like it seemed Jerry DePoto and Scott Service seemed like longtime pals. To find that out via Twitter, man, that is so brutal and must just feel so defeating. That is and embarrassing. It's embarrassing for the org, but that's embarrassing for Scott to find out that way. And then have to have a conversation with DePoto about it. DePoto, I think, said, I don't have the quote pulled up, but DePoto was like, yeah, it made a tougher conversation more tough. So again, I'm wondering, like, who leaked this? Like, if it was a member of the front office, like, that is some Bush League shit to leak this to Ken Rosenthal. DePoto had an interview with Ken Rosenthal last week. But then if the information was floating around the front office for long enough to get leaked, it makes me think this was it didn't matter what happened in the Dodgers series unless they swept or whatever. It seemed like maybe it was just going to happen regardless. It's just shambolic. Before Dan Wilson was manager, I really wanted Cal Raleigh to be named player manager. Let's bring those back. He could really be the Cap Anson of our time. He could be the Frank Chance of our time. Bring back player managers. I'm going to talk about Scott Service for a little bit and what this means. Scott Service, 9 years at the team. I mean, made the playoffs one time, inherited just like DePoto a roster, and had to try to win immediately. Didn't work. Went through an entire rebuild. Arrived as a contending team in 2021, a little bit ahead of schedule. And then 2022 broke the drought. Disappointing 2023, and obviously an even more disappointing 2024. I think it, I I retweeted it, but Scott Service was the first manager to have a 10-game lead in his division and get fired in the same season. Impressive. The Mariners keep setting records for the wrong thing. But Scott, a lot of people hated Scott, especially for this season and last season, just with the struggles of the team. Everyone likes to put bullpen decisions, lineup decisions under a microscope. I always reiterate, it's not Scott making those decisions himself. That is often a reflection of the whole coaching staff and an organizational philosophy. So it falls on Scott 100% in like the media and with a lot of the fans unfairly. He obviously probably has final say out there on the field during the game, but still, it's never just his fault. I wasn't surprised at the firing. I think it makes sense based on where they're at, but it's not going to fix problems. Like, if you actually think firing a manager in baseball is going to fix the issues, it's not. He is probably a little bit of the problem. I don't think he was helping the problem, but firing him is not going to be the solution. Regardless, he does not have a say in who is acquired by this team. He is given players to coach. And frankly, the past few weeks, the past month, as they've been losing more, I felt a little bit sour about Scott. And that's just not only the way the team was playing. They just looked flat. It looks like they didn't want to win. I think it did just run its course at this point, because so much of being a manager is literally just kind of both letting your guys do their thing, but also trying to fire them up and motivate them to play every day. And you're just kind of a cultivator of, you're kind of like a school teacher in elementary school or something. Like, you're there to facilitate these professionals and make sure they all kind of gel as well as they can, because they're playing every day. You want to make sure everyone's kind of getting along. And I think, as I've said before, if you're happy at your job, you're going to do a better job. And I feel like Scott was a pretty good manager for that. I think it's a testament to him. Like, for as much as these past two seasons, this one in 2023, were a disappointment, and maybe some of that definitely does fall on him with how he's motivated his guys and employed his guys on the field, I think you can criticize him for that. I think at the same time, you have to praise him for what he did with the team in 2021 and 2022. You can't sit here and shit on him for the past two seasons and not recognize that in 2021 and 2022, they won more games than everyone thought they would with a roster that wasn't the best. They were a pretty decent team on paper, but both those seasons, I think he got more out of the team than everyone expected. So I think with the criticism of the last few years, I think you have to give him praise for those two seasons at the very least. Before that, I don't know. I don't think it was a bang-up management job. I don't think it was a bad management job before then. And he had those couple nebulous rebuild seasons that don't really count. So the fact of the matter is, he's one of the best managers in Seattle Mariners history. I think you could probably make an argument he is the best. I'm not going to get into that. But he was with the team for 9 years. I liked him. It seemed like he was a very nice dude. It seemed like a lot of the guys in the clubhouse did like him. But just it felt like the relationship had run its course. And what I think will happen from here is not a whole lot. Like, I'm not super inspired by Dan Wilson, really. But management moves do not move me at all. The one that would really move me is if DePoto was gone. That's one that would really interest me. But a management move, it's more emotionally just kind of sad. Like, a lot of people hated Scott Service, and I guess I understand if you're losing games, it's easier to just, yeah, that guy sucks. Again, putting every bullpen decision under a microscope is going to lead you to hate most managers that you have. I don't know if anyone's ever super happy with a manager, actually, come to think of it, unless they win a World Series multiple, unless you're Bruce Bochy in San Francisco or now Texas, I guess. But it's tough. It's tough to have a guy who was there 9 years and is now gone, you know. It's I liked him personally. He seemed like a very nice fella. But where do they go from here? I don't know. But again, does not move me very much. I think ultimately, again, he was part of not solving the issues on the field, but he is far from the issue. The issue goes so much deeper. And there's clearly deep, deep issues in this organization. As seen from today, is there a communication problem? Is there a cohesiveness issue in the org between them and the ownership group? We know the ownership group is pretty stingy and has definitely limited the amount that the front office can do and has to spend. But also on top of that, we've seen the money spent from Jerry DePoto, not spent wisely. I'll always say ownership groups should allow you to spend a lot more money. But you look at the money that Jerry has spent, and some of it is good. He extended Julio. He extended Luis Castillo and traded for him, used his prospect capital to trade for him. Like the trade for Randy, I think, was a great trade. I love that. But then you look at like the Colton Wongs and Adam Frazier's and Jesse Winker and Mitch Garver's of it all. And the money he has spent that the ownership has allowed him to spend, a lot of it just hasn't been good. It's the relentless targeting of very mediocre players that has led him and his team that he is the president of baseball operations of to be so mediocre. And it's so painful because they have a generational pitching staff. And all I ever want this team to do is acquire elite hitters. And they just simply do not want to do it. They just have such an aversion to acquiring elite hitters to help the team win. I just don't understand it. So it's front office is the problem. I think the front office is probably way more of an issue than service in terms of the on-field product. But then I also just think it goes all the way back up to ownership. I think everything always goes up to ownership. I think ownership's fine. We're just turning a profit, getting a lot of people to the ballpark, being a decent team to get enough people to the ballpark to turn a profit, and they're fine with it. I don't think ownership gives a shit about winning. I think it's abundantly clear. I think if you think that they think about winning and they value winning, there's like 17 owners in that room. They don't give a shit. they don't care about winning. They do care, however, how the CEO and chairman, John Stanton, is moving to put money in their pockets every year because his team is an investment to them. They are not looking for long-term winning World Series and pennants. They're looking for short-term realized gains that they can pocket every year and then get out at a good time. That is what they're looking for. They're not trying to win. That is, it always ladders back up to ownership, and it's just, it's disappointing to think about, but that's where we're at. But I'm intrigued now to see where we're going from here. I mean, again, like I said, Service gone, DeHart gone. Are there more firings? Are there more hirings? We know Edgar is going to be a coach with Dan Wilson. I'm just so intrigued. Is the front office going to be here for the offseason? Because I'm trying to think about when would be the best time to fire the front office. I feel like it would be now. I think you'd want, if you're going to fire DePoto and like Hollander and some of their people, now would probably be the time to do it, right? I don't know why you'd wait till the offseason, because wouldn't you want to try and find a new person to run the org before the offseason starts? Or maybe you wait till the season's over and fire them on season's end. Because I guess you wouldn't be like interviewing another assistant GM of an organization during a season. So maybe the best way to do it is when the season's over, just thinking about it. Because they're going to go off and try to poach like a top GM or something. Like I'm like, hypothetically, if they tried to go after like Alex Anthopoulos of the Braves, which I doubt would ever happen. Again, they wouldn't call him mid-season. Like if the Braves missed the playoffs, right when the season ends, DePoto's gone, Stanton gives him a call because he's not worried about what's going on in the season, right? I don't know. Just intrigued to see what they do. Just intrigued. I don't know where I'm at with the front office. I think, again, I've been quite frustrated with their acquisition strategy of hitters. But they have done so much good in this org. I've talked about it a lot. I try not to just sing their praises incessantly because they've endlessly disappoint me with the product they put on the field, but I do recognize they're financially limited. And the fact of the matter is, DePoto has built a great club infrastructure, so maybe he's just not the guy to start winning World Series with. That's like a Dave Dombrowski type guy, I guess. Maybe he's just a rebuild guy, because I thought it was fine to try to get the most out of that squad he inherited, but I think the rebuild was needed, and look where they're at now. Like, they have a pretty solid core in place. The core has never really been the huge issue here. It's more the other pieces they've tried to add around it have failed. They have a good farm system. They clearly have really good pitching development. I think the hitting development is clearly come along in the minor leagues. We'll see if that ends up actually paying dividends, if any of these hitters are actually good for the Seattle Mariners at a major league level. That's the word verdict still out on that, for sure. But they've done so much good, it's tough. Because the grass is always greener. With a manager, too. Like, it's going to be hard for them, especially if it's Dan Wilson, it's going to be hard for him to be a better manager than Scott Servais. Like, the grass is always greener, and like I said, there's not that many good managers. Not that many great managers. And same with front office and, like, presidents of baseball operations, general managers, whatever you call them. Grass is always greener, and it would be hard to get better than what DePoto has done, especially if the ownership stays the same. Because DePoto's done so much good stuff, it's tough to fire someone who is, like, just there. He's a 54% GM, for lack of a better term. Like, he does a lot of things correct, but doesn't seem, maybe he's just not the guy to put the team over the top. So maybe DePoto will be doomed forever to be the rebuild guy. He definitely launched the Mariners into being a relevant, data-driven, modern organization. So maybe you can get rid of him and Hollander. I'm sure some people would leave as well on top of that. But if you can just keep the, like, developmental and scouting infrastructure that they have, because clearly something is going right with minor league and amateur and international scouting and development there. Something is going right. Major league scouting clearly leaves a little bit to be desired. So maybe DePoto, the guys who he brought in for pitching lab and just amateur scouting will stay. And I don't know about that at all. But we'll see. Maybe he's the bridge GM. He's the bridge Pobo. He builds things and leaves so a bigger, better Pobo can come in and really start laying his fist on the table like Dave Dombrowski and trading and handing out huge contracts and whatnot. So we'll see. I'm just not sure where they go from here. But God, it's been a disappointing season. This is maybe the saddest season I've ever heavily followed. It's because there was so much, it wasn't necessarily hype, expectation coming into the year. And then it didn't help. They were 10 games up in June. That really didn't help. That gave me hope. And that's the worst thing the Seattle Mariners can ever do, is give you hope, because they'll rip it right away like they have this season. It's just been so bad. But you know what? I will be here. I will be here the rest of the year. I will be potting. For lack of better judgment, I will be watching and potting about my favorite baseball team and waiting for another big move to come. One thing I will say about Jerry DePoto, too, this is the Chaos Ball Podcast, and God, if he's not, I think maybe Preller has him on this, but he's probably at least the second most chaotic GM in the league, or Pobo. Preller is an absolute maniac. I would love if Preller was my GM. Preller is exactly the type of GM, president of baseball ops, that I would be. That's kind of how I play out-of-the-park baseball. He really is not afraid to just fucking go for it, and he's an absolute maniac. DePoto's right behind him. In terms of just pure content, like, he is a content king. And I think if DePoto is gone, it's going to be tough for me to adjust, because for the amount of moves that he's done that have been so mediocre, just take a look at this offseason. Like, Luis Urias, like, come on, what is that move? He made, and like, trading for Luke Rayleigh in the offseason, and then trading with the Giants, Robbie Ray for Mitch Haniger, and then flipping Descalfani for and some prospects for Jorge Polanco. He keeps it moving. He gives me content to talk about, and I'm not a good enough person to say that when a trade happens, it's just fun. It gives me a little bit of juice. It makes my blood flow. All right. It gets the blood pumping when there's a trade of any kind. And Jerry is that kind of GM. That would be a tough adjustment period to have a new front office who's not quite as active on the trade front. But I'd hope if they're not as active on the trade front, they get better players. They acquire elite hitters. I am screaming at anyone in that organization to acquire an elite hitter. Please. Please, God. It's so painful. Well, I could keep going, but I don't want to. I don't want to keep hitting you over the head with sadness and Sisyphus quotes and all that, but I'll be back next week. The Mariners are in town again next weekend against the Angels, and I don't know if I can bring myself to go. I think that's where I draw the line. I'll watch them on TV, but last time I went to Angels baseball, you could say that was kind of the mark of the downfall right before the All-Star break. So again, not my fault. There's no way I can, as a mere mortal, can determine the outcome of this team that is driven by a cruel, cruel, cruel higher power somewhere in the universe. For as much as the ownership group sucks, and for as much as Jerry DePoto maybe sucks, and Scott Servais maybe wasn't a good manager, all of that doesn't matter because the outcomes for this team are predetermined and they're cruel to the fans, no matter what. So they play the Giants this week at home. They play the Rays this week at home. And I will be watching. I will be back next week to pod, and we'll see what happens if there's any other moves to be made coaching staff-wise. But for now, farewell, Scott Servais. Salute to you. I did like you. I'll remember you fondly. And I think you received a lot of unwarranted hate from the fan base online at certain times in your tenure. But I think he was a fine manager and a fine man. And he was Seattle's dad for a little bit there for 9 years. So salute to you, sir. And welcome Dan Wilson. You know, I mean, Dan Wilson, apparently people like him in the org, and he was a catcher. So those are two things you got going for you as a manager. Catchers are pretty decent managers, turns out. Dan Wilson, emotionally, like for a lot of people, maybe even you listening to this podcast, it might emotionally mean a lot to you because he was a pivotal member of the best Mariners teams in the history of the franchise in the 90s. For me, doesn't mean anything to me emotionally at all. I was not alive in the 90s, so I didn't see any of that. But he seems like a nice fella. Again, quite surprised he's the permanent manager. It's pretty insane. But I, you know, praying to God he's going to get these boys playing baseball well. Because, again, what would be the absolute stupidest thing for this baseball team to do is claw their way back and give me and the fans more hope in September. Like, after this terrible, terrible couple of weeks, the vibes are on the absolute floor right now. It would be so Mariners of them to just play some inspired ball and heading into September 23rd in Houston for three games, they're 2.5 back of the division, and then it's just heartbreak, and then they get swept and it's over. Like, that would be so Mariners if they clawed their way back just to get stabbed in the end. But we'll see. Not out of the realm of possibility, but it's looking increasingly unlikely they will even get close to the playoffs this year. So we'll see, but I'm ending it here. I will see you all next week. Hope you have a good next week. And I say this very solemnly, go Mariners.